Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leave the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, who is running a bit late here on Leave the Ring. He texted me a little bit. He says, I'm going to be like 5 minutes late. So that's okay, because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. Obviously, we got this past weekend, the showdown that everybody was anticipating between in a middleweight clash, Saul Canelo Alvarez versus Gennady Golovkin. It finally happened. And, you know, the lead up was the big hype that there was going to be a major clash. These guys were going to complement each other in terms of boxing style. And guess what? They did. They actually did a lot better than I thought that was going to happen. I thought that maybe we're going to have maybe two or three good rounds, and then the tables were going to turn because the bigger guy with the bigger punch was going to slowly, systematically break down the not-so-natural middleweight. But instead, what we end up having is a real test of wits. Canelo Alvarez came in. He showed his speed. He showed that muscle that he gained on his body that gave him this real, you know, little small Arnold Schwarzenegger physique, did him some good for the beginning of the fight. I'll get a little bit into the later of the fight, but for the beginning of the fight, okay? So the fight happened at the MGM Las Vegas. I'll read you off the score. I'm pretty sure, unless you were living underneath a rock or in the closet still, you know about the scorecard. So I'll first read off Dave Moretta's scorecard was 113 for – then Don Trella had 114, which is a draw. Now, the one that flew over the cuckoo nest, I mean, Bird, she had it 118-110. And that was the uproar with everybody in the fight community. Not just the boxing community, because I saw a lot of people in the MMA community, the UFC community, complaining about this. They were just throwing off about the scorecard. Now, Don Trella had numbers around 7 for Canelo Alvarez, which was really weird, because I think we all saw the same fight, which was, you know, Triple G winning that round very decisively. That was the round that you saw he cut off the ring. That was the round he basically forced Canelo Alvarez to stand and trade. So I'm going to get into that, but I want to get into the fight while I'm waiting for my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya. Hopefully he comes on right now. I don't think he's on right now, or I'll see what he came on or text me.
I am actually right here.
Oh, right there here. He is. There he is, really man? Quick. So when I – how you doing, brother? I was a little late too, so good thing, you know. We're always massively late in our own show, which is kind of – but
we're
anyways.
Working, man. You know, it's, you got to rush home, got to get that drink poured. You know, it's first things
first.
You got to
be comfortable. You got to be ready to go.
I
got to
get kind of in that – that Don Trella Adelaide Bird kind of mind, you know, not quite seeing right, a little confused, ready to judge a fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Have a few shots of whiskey and puff a few, and you'll be in that state of mind. More likely with the shot of whiskey and stuff. But, you know, before we can continue on here on the ring, I want to thank everybody that's followed us and has been contributing on our Patreon. It's much appreciated. Please continue with us. We're doing our best to try to bring up some new content. Me and Koya have talked about some stuff that we're going to be working on, which is bringing up our past interviews, which would be, looking back on Leaving the Ring. There's a lot of great interviews, I got to tell you. If you didn't have a chance to listen to the Ivan Calderon and Giovanni Segura 2010 interview that we did between them and their lead up of their big showdown in the flyweight division unification fight, you got to listen to that interview between those two. It was really good. But Really quick, let me make a rundown of what we're going to be discussing here on Leaving the Ring. First off, we're going to be talking about the September 23rd, this Saturday at the Forum on the undercard, Antonio Orozco versus Robert Ortiz. They're going to be fighting for the WBC and USNBC super lightweight title. The main event is going to be Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell, and they're fighting for the WBA, WBC Diamond, and the Ring Magazine lightweight title. So that there. Then we're going to be discussing also about the November 4th Barclays Center, just announced between the two heavyweights, Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz. I'm curious to discuss this with my partner here about their oppositions, the similar oppositions they face, and if they both, who has the better record between the two. Okay, and then a little later, I want to talk about who's left out there for the middleweight. I know Jamal Charlo is one of the names that most folks are thinking that is going to be the new conqueror after, I think, Triple G gets either old or he exits out, or Canelo, regardless right now, the way he looked, a lot of folks are jumping on the bandwagon of Charlo being 6 foot with a 73.5 reach, 26 wins, and with 20 knockouts, no losses. But there's other names on the middleweight, login that we can look at and talk about. So we'll definitely get into those topics right now on Leaving the Ring. But first, let's get back into who flew over the cuckoo nest here, Adeline Bird, about her scorecard here, Mr. Gable Montoya. 118-110, what happened?
She kept staring at Canelo's gloves that had winning on the next, on the side of him. She's like, I wonder who's, oh, he is. And she just kept writing it down. That's my guess, because 10-2, I mean, I just don't see it. I just don't understand. And what's weird is that the one round that Don Trella doesn't give, or, the key round, rather, round seven, is a round that even
number
Adelaide
seven,
Bird gave. Yeah, so it's very confusing. And, there's clearly a history here. People have been up in arms. There's people that wrote about her before. But, like Matt Christie of Boxing News Online, he wrote about it. Chris Mannix wrote about it. Lance Pugmire wrote about it, talked about it. But all three judges seem to be a little suspect. I was reminded that Don Trella actually scored the Provodnikov fight with Algieri for Algieri, which, I didn't disagree with, but most people don't agree with me that Algieri won that fight. So you kind of go, well, is that guy like the boxer that kind of moves? And clearly he's not looking at the power puncher, who's more aggressive. And you kind of take that fight and you flip it onto here and you go, well, I guess that's how he had a draw. It's all of them. I mean, I guess it's the nature of judging. But Adelaide Bird, it just seems to be – her score is like Abel Sanchez would say. Sometimes she'd be good, and then she'd have a few fights where it's just like, what fight are you watching? Too erratic. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, I think we're going to get a rematch. You have to look at all the different places and say, well, where do you lay the blame? Is it some nefarious plot by Golden Boy to have one judge just look, blind? Is it K2 going, we would like a rematch, so no matter how well my guy does, I want to make sure that doesn't happen? Or do you look at the casinos who stand to make a lot of money? And as Zach Arnold of Fight Opinion has pointed out in numerous articles now, that they're a for-profit entity, or rather they're a self-sustained, self-financing entity, the NSAC. And so they're luring people. They've changed things. There's no pay-per-view tax. I don't think there's a gate tax either. They're making themselves available to those big fights. And they had some pretty big ones this year, three of the biggest this year. And they're trying to lure, they were about to lure the rematch for Vlad and Joshua. So maybe you look at the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Maybe they're the culprit here. But who stands to gain? Las Vegas and the state of Nevada. No question.
You know, the history with Bird and Golden Boy, it goes back. I mean, if you look at the scoring that she's done in the past, right? You look at when Canelo faced Lara, Erzlandi Lara, she scored at 117-111 for Canelo. When Canelo faced Austin Trout, it was 118-109. When Canelo fought Miguel Cotto, 119-109. For Floyd Mayweather, she had it 114-114. Now with Golovkin, it's 118-110. I think if anybody has some concerns about Bird scoring, it's going to have to be the casino, Gabriel, because I've been reading here and there that casinos had to refund a lot of people's bets, especially like Caesar. Even MGM had to admit they had to return some folks' bets here because of the outcome of the judgment.
Well, that's the thing, though. When you look at it, you go, well, how much money did they lose? They had to give back a bet of $500,000. This was David Pardum from he's an ESPN staff writer that wrote this piece earlier in the week, September 18th, entitled Controversial Triple G Decision, Promised Las Vegas Refunds. Now, he claims that I think it was the MGM Grand Sportsbook, but they lost something like six figures, which if you think about it, how much Vegas takes in, I don't know how much that really is to them. You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry. Go. I'm looking for one of the articles that I was reading about that. So I give the exact number you're saying, but go ahead. Finish your thought.
Yeah. So people that voted or bet straight, you know, on Golovkin or Canelo, they got their money back because it was a draw. And people that did prop bets, those guys, you know, like picking, you know, Triple G and eight, like I did, and betting on that, not so much. They didn't get their money back. But it was interesting that one of the books, I think it was Caesars, they were the ones that said they took a six-figure loss on the draw. They opened the draw at 30-1, and they closed at 16-1.
Right.
I think it was
right.
The vice president, Jay Rude, of MGM Race and Sports said that we needed Triple G by decision. The draw was a big swing for them. The biggest bet on the fight was a $500,000 wager, according to this article. On Golovkin,
right,
at minus 170, roughly 3 hours before the fight. The bet was placed by a quote-unquote well-known casino player, and he was refunded in chips, which reminds me of the movie Casino. If it's all designed to get your money, you lay down $500,000 and you get it back in money that you're probably going to get back to the casino, which is great. But, you know, it was not good for them. But at the same time, how much money did the city get out of all those people being there? How much money, you know, did taxis and all the different businesses
that stand
to benefit probably made a ton of money, including the hotel on rooms and all that stuff. So I don't know. And then they're probably going to get the fight again, and people are going to bet again, as they do. Nobody goes, you know, this is it. I'm never laying money down. I'm never trusting boxing again.
Bad decisions are like it's like a thick fog. Eventually, you can't see for a while and you're upset about it. But once it starts thinning out and it clears, then we're happy it's a clear day once again. So that's what it comes down to. Because immediately I heard, I went to the movie theater and I watched it. I went with my wife and which was a great experience. And the crowd was great. Everybody was, you know, a lot of boos, which I was surprised. A lot of people were booing Canelo. There was a lot of Triple G fans in the movie theater. But right after, there was folks that were screaming, I want my money back. And then out in the lobby, I was listening to folks and, you know, interacting with some people. And they were saying like, oh, you know, I'll never buy another pay-per-view. I'll never do this. And I'm like, look, yeah. How many times have I heard this? How many times have I heard somebody say, I'm never going to watch the sport again? You know, I think I want to say maybe 2004, 2005. I don't even remember what fight it was. I remember what fight. Diego Corral, when he fought Joel Casamayor. Okay, now that wasn't a big fight, but I was a big Diego Corral fan. He had been dropped by Joel Casamayor. He got up, and the last round, I believe it was like the sixth round, he started finally coming on, and he hurt Joel Casamayor like what, 20 seconds before the bell rang. Then they stopped Margaret Goodman stopped the fight while they're in between the rounds to go on to the opening round, next round. And I was so pissed off that I was like, I'm never watching the sport again. I'm done. He had his momentum, but then I was right back at it again on Saturday, watching the fights that were leading up after that. So, you know, how many times we heard that? Anyways, fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's talk some boxing here on Leaving the Ring with myself, Dave Duenas, and Mr. Gable Montoya. The phones are starting to stack up over Montoya. So what do you think? We should patch in some folks we saw before we start doing our preview or continuing our conversation about what is lingering in the middleweight division for Canelo and Triple G. Phone lines first.
Somebody in.
All right, let's go with 805. You're on live right now. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Noel from TryLawSuite.com.
What's up,
Noel? Qué pasó, brother? How you doing?
You guys the other day. Good, man.
Yeah,
how are
what's
you guys?
On your mind, brother? Good, good.
Well, we're
give
we're
us your take.
Triple G.
Yeah, well, give us your take, man. What do you got?
Well, you know, I had a small fight party because I had another fight party for that May Mac, whatever the hell thing over there, or how Gabriel says, way whack, right?
Way whack, yeah.
So I had Triple G winning minimally, but a draw, I mean, I'm not mad at a draw. I mean, I can understand why the judge, I mean, so much scrutiny on the judge. I mean, that scorecard was so widespread. It's amazing. But with a track record like that, I mean, I don't know. It's on the Nevada State Athletics Committee, and it's, I don't know. But
you know, let me point something out, though, that me and Gable have been going back and forth about.
All right.
We did an interview with a guy named Brian Tofi, who wrote a book called The Fix Is In. And it was about how soccer and football and other sports, major league sports, are fixed. And we've always came across fans that go, or even people, you know, that find out, oh, you guys cover boxing. So is boxing fixed? And in the beginning, before gathering information and seeing data about other sports, you got to sit back and you got to really pay attention to the fights that are kind of fixed. Not fixed in the way you think that, you know, the mob got involved in it and like, hey, we're going to kill you if you don't fall. But we'll get into that a little bit later. But the fixing, when we saw Adeline Bird's scorecard and then Don Trello had 14-14, immediately Gabriel, basically, right, Gabriel, you just went like, the fix is in. The fix is in right here.
As we all saw the judges, it was like, oh, we're doomed. Yeah, so much for a fair fight.
Go for it. What were you going to say? Go for it. What are you going to say right now?
Well, Steve Kim said, you know, at least, Don Trello even made it, like, very, very subtle. I mean, are people really going to take a shit on him for one round? I mean, what if he was, I don't know if he's tying a shoe, looking at a girl in the crowd. I don't know what the hell he's doing, you know what I mean? But, I mean, that seventh round, okay, it's only one round, you know? You can't really, I mean, we're watching it on TV. People are watching it live, that's fine. They're tweeting from the crowd. But these guys are seeing it live right there. I mean,
and they got the best seat in the house.
Absolutely. So let's take Chocolatito, Soul Run Beside Part 1. Chocolatito landed 157 more punches. Landed. And he's still
right.
But nobody made a huge deal about it.
True.
I had Soul Run Beside winning, too. Just by a little bit. I mean, maybe it was the knockdown, maybe it was the blood on the face from the judge's perspective. I don't know. But, I mean, that's a
and
hell
I've
of a lot.
And I've said that. I've said that. I've
said that in this fight.
I think it's about expectation and what the fight is supposed to mean to the sport. You know, people were outraged, but you're right. You didn't have reporters putting on one act plays at the press conference afterwards. You know, you didn't have people being all emotional about it.
It was almost like you said, expectation. It's just because this was like supposed to be like the real fight, which it was. I mean,
for some people,
a great fight.
It was and it wasn't. I mean, if you really paid attention, not saying you, but just, you know, just in general, there were people that were saying Sorung Basai was a real guy. You know, Steve and I talked about that on the show. I know Doug Fisher had written about it. And to me, that was a much more real fight. This fight, Canelo had yet to prove anything at this weight class. He'd beaten Cotto at 155, which is technically middleweight, but he hadn't beaten anybody of note at middleweight, and he never stopped anybody. But people said, like, oh, this is fight of the decade. This is to determine the greatest middleweight. And really, it was the most popular guy against a guy that had collected most of the belts, and it established himself as close to the real champion as you could get without getting that lineal belt. That's all this fight was. But, you know, because of that, you know, you notice that the reporter that had his little one-act play, that guy pushes Triple G a lot. And he didn't mention Don Trella at the press conference. He was just all about Adelaide Byrd. And it was only later when people started pointing out to him about that seventh round that the guy kind of came around. So to me, it was kind of like
nitpicking in the little bit of point.
Well, that same night, I was talking about Don Trella, and I know other people were that were looking at the facts of the things. And I think, you know, so a little bit of fandom injected into that press conference in the disguise as a reporter, and that kind of got people. But the 10-2 is so wide that it's insulting to everybody. But the seventh round is also pretty egregious, you know? And you kind of go, well, what round were you watching? You know? Wait, how did you have the seventh?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I got you.
I always say this about robberies. Even if you stole a dollar from me, you're still stealing from me. And if they just stole one round from Triple G, you know, even if you just say, well, Adelaide looked at it in a different way. She liked boxing over brawling. Fine. But that seventh round, I mean, that's the dollar right there. You know, Dave called it the pigeon drop. You know, if you're running a con, that's, you know, that right there is the one you don't notice. I think it's egregious, you know?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Did they suspend her? She's stepping down for a little while or something, but she's still going to be involved.
Probably.
I mean, that's what the word is.
Do you get anything out of her having to watch the fight again with Bob Bennett? I mean, I don't, to be honest. She's not going to sit in the same seat.
I think they should get judges from all over the place instead of just Nevada. You know what I mean? I mean, they need to get other people that don't have a track record of, like,
don't have an investment being there. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Because it's one of the, you know, it's being marketed as possibly one of the best middleweight fights of all time. You know, like the real fight, the biggest fight of the year, like you said, the fight of the decade. I mean, but I don't know. Apparently they have so much confidence in these judges that it's just,
you know, it goes with anywhere though. I mean, listen, if you look at, it's just not Vegas. I mean, look at Al Haymon. He tries to keep most of his fights out of Las Vegas because he has more control in saying who can be the judge and what happens here and there. So it's really the influence of the person that has the money bag. That's what it comes down to, you know?
Absolutely. I wrote before that they should have put this in, like, Dallas Stadium. Yeah, tickets would be a lot less for and more, but more eyeballs would be on the fight, you know? I mean, but like you said, where the money is, correct? I mean, it's just, I don't know.
Unfortunately, that's how it's always worked in boxing, you know?
Like, you know, as 2017 has steadily built more and more eyeballs, you know, more fans or returning fans, you know?
Here's the good thing, though. Here's the thing that I think nobody's talked about yet, and I think this is the good thing about what's going on in this generation is that it's very quick now to force your opinion and your dislikes over social media. And now the promoters like Oscar De La Hoya and the PBC, they're now able to see the large reaction that people are having. Even these commissions are starting to see, even the WB, you know, the alphabet title guys, you know, WBC, WBA, they're starting to be able to see the heat that they can get from the fans themselves. Now, how much of effect is it going to have? We don't know yet. It's still fairly new. If you look at the promoters now, they're barely starting to trickle in and how to use social media. They're starting to stream it. They're starting to put it on Facebook. So there could be a major backlash by them embracing the internet. We just have to sit back and wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Man.
All right, brother. Let me ask you, you got a quick pick for this Saturday between Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell?
Linares.
Linares by what decision or by KO?
Let's say Linares TKO 10th round.
10th round. There you go. You're on the red, man. All right, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold. I'm going to put some ass in, man. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Been a pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, man. Isn't it interesting, Dave, that, like, you know, you can get foreshadowing if you're always watching all these fights. And it didn't even occur to me in the lead-up, but it was like that David Benavidez-Ronald Gavril fight, which was a split decision win for Benavidez, that a lot of people said, hey, yeah, I think Gavril won. You know, it was a tough, close fight that you could argue either way. Guess who was one of the judges for that fight? Adelaide Bird, 116-111. You know?
Yeah.
This was kind of a trifecta. You had Dave Moretti in there at 117-111 and Glenn Trowbridge, 111-116 the other way. You know, it was
She leans with the money. I mean, if you look at the 14-14 for Floyd Mayweather and Canelo, she knew that she couldn't go one way because they both are going to bring they're both money cows, you know?
Well, and if
but
you're,
at,
if
at
you're,
the same time,
you know,
though. If you're what? If you're
just
Bob Bennett?
It's an innate conflict of interest. If you're Bob Bennett or a judge there that's trying to get those big assignments, not just the little ones, but the TV assignments, which are probably more money, that you've got to lure these big fights here and you can't screw people over. And even the refs, look at Robert Byrd in that Maymack fight. He didn't take any points for all those illegal blows and the holding and all of that. It was just, he was just in there as a personality. He was just there to kind of preside.
Well, even what
Kennedy
he did
Bayless
with Randy Caballero even with Randy Caballero and Diego De La Hoya, you know, there were some points where he could have jumped in. It was terrible. His refereeing was terrible.
But you know, they get the high-profile assignment by being politically correct. I mean, to me, that is politically correct. You know, people use that phrase all the time. I think they mean I don't get to act like a jerk like I want to. But in this case, it's politically correct to lean towards the money and make sure that the money keeps coming back to Nevada. You know, I mean, it's and you don't know if that's just the casinos hooking you up with a good room, and maybe there's an envelope in the room, or if that's the promoter, or it's just you know, a conspiracy of several different factions.
If you're a promoter and there's a judge that seems to favor the house guy, the house name, or the train that's going to be hauling in the cash in the audience, you're not going to point it out, the corruption there. We saw that with Oscar in the press conference. He started off with a speech by saying that she's great. She did a job. And then all of a sudden, like you mentioned on the next round, it was a different tune to dance. Yeah, it was a completely different tune and dance. You know, it was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, oh, my God, how could, you know. But like I said, it's pointing out from the fans. It's the lead up which you have to applaud and take notice to the guys that were mentioning this before the fight was over with Lance Pugsmeyer and Chris Mannix. They were writing it and they were pointing it out. They pointed it out. This is a problem, having Bird as a judge. But Don Trell is also a problem, and that's why me and you had said to each other, the fix is in, because everybody, you know, it's just like that, you know, the card game and stuff, you know, on the streets, on the strip of Vegas, they have the three cards. Keep your eye on the card, keeping your eye on the card. And there's three other people betting, they might win. You're keeping your eye, you know, you're noticing the other person's betting, but you're not realizing is that they're in on the con. And that could be the thing with the judging here. Everybody's eyes were on Bird, but not realizing that Don Trella was the kill factor here. Why did he score Canelo on the sixth round when it was clearly Triple G's run? Made no sense. Anyways, let me patch in another fight fan before we continue on here. Let's go. Area code 405. You're on live right now and leaving the ring.
Hey, guys.
405.
Santos from Oklahoma.
Santos, how you doing,
hey,
brother? What's
Santos
on your mind?
Not much. I watched a fight with at my brother's house, and I had a bunch of cousins and friends there, and mostly all Mexicans, and they were all going for Canelo, and I had bet my compadre $100 that Triple G would win. And after the fight, before the fight was over, they were like, man, Canelo lost. And pretty much had a feeling that Golovkin had won. And, and I was like, hold up. I was like, this is Vegas. Like, something fishy could happen. And it happened. And it was like, my compadre tried to give me half, at least, like, let me give you $50. So, because we all know he lost. So I was like, no, I can't take your money.
Dude, that's a good compadre right there, bro. Because my compadre would be like, no way. No, he lost. You know what I mean? They'll hand me a beer, but they won't give me the cash, you know?
No, he's like, let me give you $50. And I was like, no, I can't take your money. They cut it a draw. And but the thing I feel like, guys are talking about, the other card is the one that really put the nail in the coffin, was that 114-114. That's the one that did it in, because if he gets called that seventh round, Golovkin wins. But I think I heard a game on Twitter with Steve say that Adelaide Bird trains other judges, don't you, Gabe?
Right.
Yeah, Bob Bennett said that. Like, we really have a lot of faith in her, and she trains the other judges. And it's like, holy shit, you know? Do they wear glasses too? Or, you know?
It's like,
something's wrong
with that's, having a. I'll use another analogy, like Steve used his, but mine would be that's like having somebody legally blind teaching somebody how to use a gun and a gun range. You know, it's dangerous. That's dangerous, man.
Yeah.
The thing is, Gabe and Dave, like you see a lot of these judges, and it's nothing against old people and everything, but most of the people are kind of old. Like, why can't they get young blood in there? Like, younger people, and they're like, it's always the same crowd of judges or refs in there, and it's always the same people messing it up.
You do see younger
That's
judges. The thing is that younger judges are for the they're not either, they're just for the upcoming fighters, non-televised fights. They get lesser money. That's the thing that you do see. You know, I mean, there is new blood trickling in, but it's not trickling in fast enough to take over. Because you're right. I mean, some of these judges, even when they talk, you can see the dust coming out of their mouths already.
Plus, you know, didn't they, like, judge the whole night? So, I mean, you get tired. I don't know if you've ever – you've been to live fights, right, Santos? And Dave, you've been –
Yeah, I went to the – my first fight was the StubHub Superfly.
Well, they did have a mix.
Oh,
I'm actually looking at the card. They did have a mix of people. So it was really just The heavy hitters came in for that last fight, nice and fresh, so they could get it all wrong. They actually had some good people. Lisa Jampa, well, she can be good. Burt Clements could be good. They had some good people on the. How about this guy, Tim Cheatham? That's a great name. He did the Diaz Rafael Rivera fight. I just don't understand what it is that Adelaide Byrd did to be in that position. What did Don Trella do to be in that position? What fights make them, you know, what's the system? In the NFL, if you don't screw up, you know, you get a high score and you end up in the Super Bowl. In boxing, if you screw up, you end up doing the big pay-per-views.
If you take the envelope, Gabriel, in boxing, if you take the envelope, your chances of getting the big fight is much greater. That's how it goes in boxing.
I just, you know, I want to know, before I say it's that kind of corruption, I want to know more. But, I mean, you know, there's definitely, as they would say in the intelligence community, smoke. It's a lot of smoke. That's the thing. It's like, I don't need histrionics. I don't need, or, you know, just emotional outbursts. What we need is, like, long, sustained reporting and digging into these folks, their money, who, you know, how did they get the fight? Who else was on the list? Who was objected to that got turned away? You know, was this person objected to by the promoter? Why did they stay on the list? You know, like all that stuff. Those are all the questions that now need to be answered.
And another question, guys, because I've seen that Canelo, I don't think he's going to get the immediate rematch, Golovkin is, but what would Canelo do, like, in May? Who would he fight? I don't think he's going to fight Lemieux or Jacobs. What would he fight, like, a Rosado?
That's something that we're going to talk about a little later. Yeah.
Or is he gonna do a Canelo weight fight? You know,
I tell you what, he's gonna have to maintain that muscle mass. He's gonna have to maintain that. So for him to put going back down, to me that just spells, yeah, it's not gonna do well for his body. You know, and that's one thing that had my concern about him is that he's now that he has this muscle mass, now that he's got this, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger physique, he's got to maintain that. Because messing around with it, trying to go back down or get smaller, it's not going to go well with him, with his body. He can age pretty quick. We've seen it happen in boxing too many times.
Yeah. But I can't see him. I think it has to be a pretty good fight because the fan. Well, of course, he always have fans, but he can't go down and step down and fight a catchweight and people would be like, why don't you just give Golovkin the rematch? Like, what?
He can. He can. He's got enough star power. He can do it. You know, I mean, that's the one thing. I remember when he had knocked out Amir Khan, everybody said, that's it. He has to fight, you know, he has to fight Triple G. And I had told her, but no, he doesn't. He doesn't have to do anything. The fact is that he is the box office fighter. He could do what he wants. He can make the other person wait. He can make the fans wait. Because as long as he has the loyal fans that are okay on his moves, then he's okay. Anyways, brother, thanks for calling in. I'm going to put you back on hold. Okay?
Thanks, guys.
You know, let's go into how Canelo did. Because like I said, to me, Canelo did a lot better than suspected. He answered a lot of questions for myself that I had about him leading into this middleweight title fight with Gennady Golovkin. One was, how is he going to react when he gets hit? Was he going to have movement? Was the muscle there to cush the impact of the punches? All of that. The one thing that I could tell you that did stand out for me, and I know that a lot of Canelo fans are not going to be happy about what I'm going to say, but Canelo to me is a middleweight frame guy that belongs at 154, but has the power of a 147 pounder. Because he connected with Triple G. In those early rounds, the body work that he invested was great. But let me ask you something, Gabriel. Did it ever look like Triple G slowed down? I didn't see him slow down at all.
Well, he got tired.
He continued
the
pressure.
But he didn't. Yeah, he got tired, but he kept coming forward. He kept trying to do what he wanted to do. He wasn't always throwing punches. He would stop sometimes after body shots. But his game plan was to march forward and to slide side to side and get, you know, cut down the ring, get Canelo into the corners, get him along the ropes and go at him. And I think people wanted him to sell out more when he got Canelo to the ropes. But Canelo likes to be on the ropes. So,
yeah.
You know, it was kind of like, it's where I want you to be, but I also know that you're good here. So he was careful. He'd use the jab. He'd stay just out of range, wouldn't completely sell himself out. And he also didn't come all the way in and make it really a phone booth, which I was a little bit surprised. But, Canelo is not bad on the inside. He's got really nice uppercuts. He can dig to the body as well in that position. And so, you know, he was judicious. But, I didn't, you know, people look at that punch and go, wow, that knocked out Amir Khan, but it didn't knock out Khan or didn't knock out Triple G. And it's like, well, yeah, Amir Khan got knocked out at lightweight and at 140. He had no business at 155, so of course that knocked him out. But with a natural middleweight, no, it's not going to happen. I think you're right on with that assessment. 147-pound power at 160.
You know, the thing is that because of the muscle that he gained for this fight and was able to still continue to move very well, yeah, did he go into the survival mode in those late rounds? Did he move a lot more? I won't disagree with anybody on that. But I think that if Canelo decides to stay at 160 and maintains that muscle mass, I think that he ends up working with it even better because it was something still new that he was trying out the middleweight division for the first time, one of the best middleweights of the division at this moment, which is Gennady Golovkin. So to me, it's uphill, not so much downhill. I still think he's very competitive with anybody at 160. I know a lot of folks are automatically jumping about Charles, who's a 6 foot, middleweight. But here's the thing about Jermall Charlo, the twin, that 26 wins and 20 knockouts, and he's an undefeated fighter here, Gabriel. He's got a 73.5 reach. Canelo's 5'9" with a 70.5 reach. But this is something that nobody's pointing out, because if there's questions about Charlo too being at the middleweight division. Yeah, he's a tall kid. He's a big kid. But his better days was at 154. In 2015, he won the IBF lightweight middleweight title by knocking out or TKOing Cornelius Bungridge. After that, he had a unanimous decision over Austin Trout. Then against the highly regarded contender Julian Williams, he ended up knocking him out in the fifth round. All of that was done in the 154. The only win that he has at 160 limit was by getting a TKO over Jorge Sebastian Haydn in four rounds. So do you think it's fair for us to say, hey, we don't know a whole lot about Charlo yet as a middleweight as well? So if there was to be a fight that's being talked about between Saul Canelo Alvarez and this kid, I would have to say that it's going to be a competitive fight. I don't see it being so one-sided for Jermall Charlo. What do you think? You're on mute.
Well, I just think that no, I'm just kind of taking in your question. I was looking at the options for Canelo. They're not going to. There's a rematch clause, but they don't want to fight again until like May. Canelo's now
right.
A two-time a year guy, which is crazy. He's 27 years old. He's only going to fight two times a year. So they're kind of done getting better, you know, which is nuts, you know. And I think Triple G wants to fight again, but at 35, should he be fighting three times a year? Is he going to wear out like Sergio Martinez did in the back end of his career, or does it keep him sharp? It's hard to say. I don't know.
I say one fight in between for Triple G. I mean, because what I saw with the pressure that he put on Canelo, I would say another fight in between. Now, that's against somebody if I was in the Triple G, you know, corner, I would say, hey, the obvious guy would be BJ Saunders. Why? Because he doesn't pack a whole punch. He's going to move a lot. And you can work on cutting off the ring. You'll work on still trying to, you know, catch up to your guy. It's going to be a poor version of when you face Canelo. That's what I would go. With Canelo, David Lemieux, who's 38-3 with 33 knockouts, is underneath the Golden Boy banner. I don't know. You might call me crazy, Gary. You might see this different, but I would favor Canelo right over Lemieux, to tell you the truth. Just what I saw on the display from this past Saturday of how he boxed and how he counters, and saying that he's a middleweight frame but belongs at 154, but only carries 147 power, he does carry 160 chin. The guy can take a hit.
Yeah, I would take that fight. I think people might think he's crazy, but I mean, again, if Canelo's fighting in May, then probably the next fight for him would be the rematch. You know,
if
Golovkin,
he's
going to try to fight
in this. Right. Is it safer than facing a Danny Jacobs? Is it safer for him to face against a Jermall Charlo? Is the David Lemieux more safe, or do you talk to Golden Boy and go, hey, there is a name out there that I think people will be okay with. They're not going to be totally excited about, but the guy could take a hell of a shot. And he just fought Miguel Cotto, which would be a comma guy.
Ugh.
I know.
Yeah, no. I mean,
the only fight I want to see comma guy in is against Antonio Margarito. I don't know about you, but I'm bloodthirsty for that fight.
Oh, God. That's grim. I just, you know, what fight is going to make this fight make more money the next time for either guy? Maybe for Triple G, it would be BJ Saunders adding yet another belt to the pot. Either
right.
one of those guys. But I, like I said, Canelo's not fighting again until May. So it's up to Triple G to probably fight again before then. And maybe Canelo picks up something before May, but certainly not this year is what they said. So, you know, one of those guys picking up the belt is going to sweeten the pot. But Canelo is already a star. I think you know, it's hard to answer that question. I don't think either. Even picking up the belt, I mean, how much bigger is the fight going to get? Everybody already saw it. It was on a big stage. We don't know what the numbers are yet for the pay-per-views, but I'm sure it did very well. I mean, I tried to see it here in San Francisco in the theaters, and it was sold out, so I ended up watching it at home. So in a couple locations. So, you know, I think the fight did kind of break through. Short of fighting on ESPN or terrestrial TV, I mean, what are they going to do to get another, you know, to get a to expand their profile? I don't know. Beating Billy Joe Saunders, I mean, you're going to have to go to the UK to do that, you know, or will you be able to bring him over here to do it? Anybody beyond that for Triple G, I think, besides maybe a Danny Jacobs rematch, which I think would be pretty crazy for him to take because I don't think he wins it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Anything else doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah,
I don't want to just watch him beat up some guy.
It
kind of
leaves
you know?
It really leaves him between a hard place and a rock. You know, which way do you go? You go to BJ Saunders, you go to the UK, you risk, again, trying to leave it in the hands of the judges. There's a strong possibility because the last fight with BJ Saunders, I couldn't even get through all of it when he fought Monroe Jr. It was that bad.
Oh,
the most exciting
brutal,
part was his – yeah,
really
it was just
–
I mean,
but,
yeah.
Man, that was brutal.
The best punch the best punch was BJ Saunders' son punching Willie in the Willie. And then tell him
wow.
F you when they're trying to pull the kid. They try to pull the kid out off the stage. I don't know if you saw that. And another kid jumped in and told them F you to Willie Monroe Jr. And I was just like, what the? What am I watching? Baby kids here? You know? Fight fans, you want to call in? Certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're going to be going into the preview of Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell, which is happening at the Forum this Saturday. So let's go with area code 619. You're on live right now, leaving the ring. 619.
Hey, David. How are you? Gabe, this is El Chacal. How are you?
El Chacal, ¿qué pasó, brother? How you doing, man?
Not much. Here trying to listening to the show. I'm still at work, but I'm trying to, you know, to follow up with you guys. Good that you guys are back into the show. So, just trying
thank
to
you, brother. Thank
listening
you.
To,
now, Chacal, I
to
know
your
that
opinion.
You scored it for Canelo. So, give us your breakdown. Give us your take about what you saw between Saul Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin this past Saturday.
Well, I mean, I did score the fight, but I didn't score it for Canelo. I scored it as a draw.
Oh, that's
I gave
right. You did.
The first,
yeah.
I watched it twice. I watched it once live, and when I watched it live, I gave the first three rounds to Canelo, and I gave I think it was round nine. So I gave him six rounds, but out of those six rounds, I gave to Canelo four rounds that for me, they were good rounds for Canelo, not in the sense that they were, how can I say it? Like they were like very good fight rounds. It was more like a round that I thought that Canelo did enough and probably Golovkin didn't do too much to get the round. And those were the first three and the 12 rounds. So then after that, I mean, I had the 11 that I thought that Canelo was shifting the momentum, especially from like, you know, like being kind of like out of the fight on the middle rounds. And I got the round nine that I was kind of like excited about the you know, the trading of punches and everything. And I give it to Canelo too. So I got those and I got a draw. And then I saw it back again, the fight. And I still have it 6-6, but now with the difference that instead of the 9, I given the – I think it was the – instead of the 11, I given the 10. So it was like a trade over there in one round. But I still get it as a draw. But like I said, I mean, I totally understand the fact that Golovkin could have won the fight. I mean, I don't think there is an argument that is valid that it will say that, you know what, that it's a really, really close decision and maybe we could not give it to Golovkin. I think Golovkin easily had the chances, well, more chances to be the winner than Canelo. I think you need to, in my opinion, I saw four rounds that they were good for Canelo, and then there were another four rounds for Golovkin that obviously those four rounds that he did, they were a lot stronger rounds for Golovkin than the ones for Canelo. But there were rounds that at the end of the day, both fighters did enough, in my opinion, to win him. And then I saw four rounds that you can actually swing. So I was like, you know, in order for Canelo to win, he would have to win three rounds out of those four. And to be honest, I don't think he did enough for that. So that's what I see more Golovkin as the winner because of the pressure and everything.
You know, the swing rounds for me were the first round and that 12th round. How did you have the score, Gabriel, again? You had it, what, 7-5?
I had it really wide, man. No.
Really?
Ultimately, it was like 8-4 because I had a couple swings. The night of the fight, I had a couple bourbons. During the fight, I had it 10-2 Golovkin, but I had marked two swings, and when I went back to rescore it and actually finished rescoring, it came out 8-4, and those swings kind of flipped the other way. But it was not.
I had it 8-4 too in the beginning.
That
right,
Canelo had seven rounds. There's just no way. I just don't. I don't even think six.
In the beginning, I had it 8-4 in the beginning. Then when I think it was what was it? Monday, Tuesday, Chakal, you hit me up on the messenger. You said, "Well, how did you score?" And I said 8-4. But then I went back and watched it again. I had a 7-5. You know, I ended up changing my score to 7-5. I mean, like I said, the swing rounds for me was the first round.
For me, those are very valid scores. 7-5 is very valid. 8-4, I have a little bit of a problem on that one. But, you know, like, more than that, I feel that it's
he lives in San Francisco,
Chuck.
He lives down over there. If you have a problem with it, you can jump on the train. Gabriel Montoya lives in San Francisco. I can give you his address. I'm out of this, you know.
No, something very, very funny because I watched, like, the comments from Eric Morales, you know, that he was actually calling the fight for like Space. It's called Space Channel. It's a Latin American TV channel. So he was saying something interesting about the fight. You know, he was saying that Canelo was fighting kind of like very different and with respect to like he was fighting a lot on the first minute of the round, but then he was kind of like let the whole rest of the round go. And then he was kind of giving in the initiative to Golovkin to steal the round or, like,
more
work on the round. And you know what?
That's
like, that's what I did on my fight with Barrera, the number one. And to be honest, he said the judges most of the time go with the impression of the last part of the round, which is the way they do it also with the last part of the fight. If you're going to win some rounds, be sure to win the last rounds, right, because they're always going to count it that way. So I think that part, he's right. I guess – the reason why I saw those rounds like that is because in the beginning I didn't think Golovkin was pressuring the fight.
I said, listen, you can't win.
Hello?
You hella breaking up, dog.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I'm not sure what happened with Dave.
I don't
could
hear
be a
Dave.
Connection. A little bit.
Back low because I can't hear you.
Can you hear me? Yeah. Oh, I can hear Gabe, but I can't hear Dave.
Yeah, I'm actually just staring at the Chris Algieri, Ruslan Provodnikov scorecards, and there's Dontrella. Algieri down twice in the first round. Dontrella, 112-114 for Chris Algieri. You know, Tom Schreck had it that way too, but, you know, Max DeLuca had to fight 117-109. So depending on where you're standing, you could be mad at Max DeLuca for being Adelaide Bird in that fight. But he didn't cost anybody the fight. How did people that you saw the fight with, how did people react to that?
Well, you know, I think that was one of the things that I was going to say. I think the big issue here was the scorecard of Adelaide Bird. You know, like she basically screwed up everything. Because, you know, kind of like portray Canelo as the protected fighter. And, you know, to be honest, I don't think it's something that he needs. You know, like I think the guy, I mean, at least one of the things that I feel proud about him is that I've been following him for a while. and I kind of like being, you know, being bullied by a lot of Mexicans and a lot of other people saying that Canelo is kind of like the protected fighter from Mexico, that is just a product of the marketing from Televisa and now from Golden Boy, and they're trying to put him on a position where he actually don't belong. And I mean, I get the part that probably Canelo is, this is not his era, and that probably he's not the face of boxing as the most gifted fighter or the best fighter right now in the business. But I mean, what I give to the guy is that he's been dedicated to the sport and he's been evolving mm-hmm. and improving each fight that he's been having. You know what I mean? We see fights like, for example, okay, he fought Amir Khan, he fought Liam Smith. You know, and you can tell anything about the opposition, but it's not just the people that you win, it's how you win. And I think he could easily could have looked like Golovkin did against Kell Brook and just try to be the bully, and no matter if he gets punched, you're just going to impose yourself and beat the other guy, or try, you know, or try to actually, you know, if you're already in a fight where you have the advantage, try to implement new things, try to box, try to work your defense, things like that. And at the end of the day, I mean, you know, the other guy is not going to beat you, but try to do new things. And that's what I got from those fights. I wasn't happy that he was facing Khan, but I was happy the way he developed inside of the ring. And I think all mm-hmm. those things help him to get into this fight with Golovkin without actually having a fight with a true middleweight like a Lemieux or any of the other guys there, and go straight to the big guy. You know what I mean? And try to do this kind of fight. And I think probably Jacobs could be like more competitive than what Golovkin, I mean, with Golovkin than what Canelo was. But I think Canelo did pretty well for being in his first fight against a guy like Triple G.
Absolutely.
So, and then the thing here is that he forced Triple G into do a different fight that apparently he, you know, he's not like very used to do. Like, for example, like he always talks about the Mexican style, and this thing is kind of like the thing that came in as the you know, the topic for this fight, the same way it was between Chavez Jr. and Canelo, the whole betting about the purse and everything. Here is like, oh, who's the real Mexican style? Who has the Mexican style? But let's be honest, when Triple G kind of like was brought up into American market, the whole thing about him was like he was like fighting like a Mexican fighter, more like fighting like Julio Cesar Chavez. Like he said, like, oh, I fight like Chavez. I see the videotapes from Chavez, and he's developing into what Chavez was. And to be honest, on the last fight, when he faced true opposition, we didn't see that. You know what I mean? We didn't see Triple G mm-hmm. going to the body. So even Chavez said it. Chavez said, okay, he says that he fights like me, but I don't fight like that. You know, he basically used the jab a lot, which, I mean, I don't have anything against that. I think that's a really good weapon because he has probably the best jab in the industry right now. But at the same time, if he was the puncher, if he was the guy, the true middleweight, the guy that had the 23 knockouts in a row, I mean, why he didn't let his hand go? Why he didn't throw to the body? And, you know, the only answer that I can get is because he was bothered by Canelo's speed combined with his power. Probably Canelo is never going to have the punching power of a true middleweight. He's never going to be a punching fighter at the middleweight class, but he has enough punching power combined with that speed to bother the middleweight fighters. And that's why Golovkin, I don't think that's why he didn't go to the body. He didn't go to the body because he was, you know, bother about being countered and get hit. Regardless if he got hit with the best shots of Canelo, like people said, oh, he got hit with the same right that he knocked Khan out, and he didn't do anything to Golovkin. I mean, he probably didn't do anything, but he was hurt. And, you know, and that we can and we side with his with the
you know,
way he fought. He
the only thing the only thing I agree with you to a certain extent, because you're right. When Triple G had him against the ropes, there was a lot of folks that said, why didn't he not just go attack him right away? The one thing that I noticed that I liked that Triple G did, though, was he didn't try to, you know, overload and gas himself out. He was being very methodical. He threw his punches and he resetted himself. And he also understood that he had a really good guy that knew how to counterpunch him. And that was smart of him, that he decided to, you know what, I'm going to throw shots that are going to count. Did they miss? Yeah, a lot of them did miss, but I thought that some of the shots that he did make, that did land, That's what it made Canelo move. And that told me the power of Triple G bothered Canelo as much as the speed and the counterpunching bothered Triple G. And And I think that's why most folks said, hey, they complimented them, each other. And they did. They really did compliment each other in their fighting style. Chacar, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, because we got some other callers on the line, okay? It was great hearing from you, though.
Really good let me ask you one question, one last question. Do you guys feel that in the rematch, who do you guys feel can make more adjustments? Because to be honest, on this first fight, I feel that if Canelo would have more gas, and the gas was kind of like out because of the way he punches, and because the new muscles and everything, you know, like. What kind of adjustments do you think Triple G will do? Because I didn't see him making any adjustments from the fight with Jacobs to this fight. I think he fought very similar.
Well, I think the adjustments for Canelo is to maintain that physique he has, to get used to that extra muscle so that it doesn't gas him out. Because as we all know, the more muscle you put on, the heavier that is. So it's going to slow you down a bit. It's going to tire you out. For Triple G, I think like everybody's asking, where in the hell is the body? Where's the body work? Where's the? I watch Julio Cesar Chavez tapes and I want to mimic them. We got to see some of that. I think on both parts, both guys have something to bring back in the rematch and can have some adjustments to it. Triple G can obviously start a little earlier than he did in this last fight. Canelo can obviously stand and trade and try to be in the pocket, because when he did do exchanges in the early rounds, I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought he won the early exchanges in the first couple of rounds. So there is some adjustments that I think both men can bring to the table. Good.
I think Canelo could build on the success he had in the middle of the ring, because I thought he did very well in the middle of the ring, and Golovkin wanted it in the corners, and where he was a little bit closer, as you said, he moved too much. I wanted him to hold still so I could hit him. Well, I'm paraphrasing.
Right.
But I thought you made really great points. I'm really kind of tired of Golovkin talking about Mexican style. Be Kazakh and Korean style. That's what you are. Be yourself. Let us worry about ourselves. Because there's Salvador Sanchez, there's Ricardo Lopez, there's Juan Manuel Marquez. There's all kinds of different styles of Mexican styles, you know,
Jorge
all different Paez. Kinds of Mexican styles. Jorge Paez,
yeah.
Exactly. And from to kind of brand us as we stand and trade, and that's all we do is we're super aggressive. Just like worry about yourself. I don't have anything against the guy, but especially if you're not going to bring up the wall, you're going to shake Donald Trump's hands after he called Mexicans rapists and criminals. Just stick to Kazakh and Korean. But I think that Canelo probably can make more adjustments. With one other exception, I would say heading into this fight, Canelo had fought, I think, 10 or 11 times it all the way to the 12-round distance, dating back to very early on in his career when he was a welterweight. Like, I think, you know, he did it like maybe under 10 fights. I could be wrong. This was the second time Triple G's fought a full 12 rounds. So I think he's going to understand himself a little bit better, his energy levels. I thought when they got to the 10th, Canelo stepped on the gas and knew what it felt like, how to save that energy and what that felt like to know, okay, I've got this amount of energy left. Whereas I think Triple G is still figuring himself out at that 12-round stage, particularly with the kind of style that he faces. He's clearly got a great engine, but he could probably meet out his energy a little bit better, and he'd probably start a little faster next time. He won't feel him out for two rounds and then step on the gas. I think maybe he'll step on the gas sooner. But if I had to lean towards somebody in the rematch, I'd probably end up picking Canelo.
You know what? You're not the first one I've heard say that. The one thing about Triple G that I saw that going even back with the Danny Jacobs fight is he sees the bullseye and he kind of gets memorized with it. He falls into the tunnel. He doesn't understand that there's another side of the road. You know, he doesn't understand that you can go on the left lane and the right lane. He stays right in that middle lane. And I think that's something that the habit that Abel Sanchez is going to have to break for him if they have a chance to win in the rematch, because the adjustments are with Canelo. He can make a lot more. He could do a lot more. He's the younger guy where time is running out for a Triple G. Triple G, to me, has got to go back to how we saw him originally in the beginning of his career, which is learned is what's he did beautiful. He painted the canvas, which is he went from the body to the head to the head to the body. We saw that being demonstrated with Joseph Diaz on the undercard. He was going to the body, the head to the body. Those things is something that Triple G needs to work on. He needs to get off of the bullseye. There's more than one bullseye that he can concentrate in the rematch. Also, too, like I said, you know, there's effective aggressiveness, and he showed that. But in some of the rounds, for me, he just followed a little bit too much. He didn't really cut off the ring. And when he did cut off the ring, he was effective. He made the he made Canelo fight. And that's what you want to do is make the younger guy expand energy that he that you know he's going to be overzealous. He's going to try to, you know, be the faster guy, the younger guy. That's what an older, smart fighter is supposed to do. Make the younger guy commit to something that's going to be a mistake so you can capitalize because you have more ring experience. You have more time in the ring than he has, so you should be a little bit more comfortable to see the mistake the younger lion's going to do. So that's something right there that Triple G obviously needs to work on. Canelo, he's starting to grow on me. You know, I had a few people that hit me up. They're like, Dave, did he finally impress you? And I said, he impressed me. He did impress me. But unfortunately, I'm like that cousin in Blood and Blood Out. You know, El Gallo Negro to Miklo, you know, where the fluorescent, hey, your skin is too fluorescent bright for me right now. I'm still that guy. He still has a lot. And why? Because I hold very high Mexican fighters, being that I'm Mexican, I hold them very high. They have to do a lot to impress me because the guys that I grew up around, the Salvador Sanchez, the Finito Lopez, you know, the Jorge Paez, the Bobby Chicones, all these guys, those are the guys that impressed me. Those are the guys that I was memorized by Eric Morales. So Canelo still, for me, has a very long road to get to. I mean, but he's getting there. And I am getting impressed. I want him, though, to stay with that physique. I don't want to see him to drop down. I think it's a terrible mistake if he decides to flirt with the weight and look for catch weight. He needs to stay at one weight. He needs to be a conqueror at that weight. He needs to be comfortable at that. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-758. We got a lot of stuff here to cover. We only got about another hour to go, so we could patch in maybe one or two more calls here. But we got to cover the this Saturday fight at the Forum between Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell, and then we got to talk a little bit about Dante Wilder and Luis Ortiz. The press conference happened. It's happening November 4th at the Barclay. So we'll patch in one or two more fight fans here, Gabriel.
Sounds good to me.
All right, so let's go area code 209. You're on live right now, Leaving Ring. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
Hello.
What can we do for you?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Hey, well, the Canelo fight, I'm sure you guys heard it all, so I probably won't talk about that. But, you know, like you said, I really was impressed with Canelo. Personally, I thought Triple G won, but, you know, I'm a Canelo fan. That fight just pretty much reassured that I will be buying his fights for the next 3 or 4 years, man. So I guess Canelo's a real winner here. Hello?
Being a Canelo fan, do you worry that, or before this fight, were you worried that maybe I'm watching just a product, a guy that has good matchmaking, and in this fight, did it change your mind and go, no, he can hang with the big guys?
You know, in all honesty, beforehand, I would like to see him match up pretty tough, pretty good. As for the entertainment value, but that's something I can't control. You know, as a fight fan, I can't control it, even though I'd want it, you know. But I was pretty content, you know, because a lot of his pay-per-views, I mean, I was buying them and I was watching him for him. Now, do I feel he was built up? Well, I guess as a promoter, you want to build up your fighters, right? You don't want to put them in harm's way right off the bat. We've been watching Canelo for a while when he was on Floyd Mayweather's undercards. After he fought Floyd, maybe when he fought at Ferro, you know, I thought right there that fight was meant to make him look good because he actually did. He looked very good. He looked very fast. But, you know, what can I say? You know, I'm a Canelo fan. I mean, there's a fighter. I like his style. I like his heart, his matchup. I really can't control that.
I've never been upset. I know the criticism has been his matchmaking, but if you look at the line of fighters that he's fought, it's pretty deep. There's an argument there you can make that the guy has been matched up. One way to look good and another way to be tested. My thing is this: is that when you're a promoter and you got a kid that should be really at 147, but outgrew that weight class, and you've seen other fighters do that. You as a promoter, you're now kind of playing the guessing game. Where do we place him? Because he's only getting bigger, and if he's only getting bigger, how do we matchmake him? How do we build him into this superstar? It's always a gambling, and I think for Golden Boy's credit, they try to play it safe in certain times. It worked out because they made a shitload of money out of it. But they ran out of the options of, you know, saying, okay, is he ready? I think they finally went in thinking, biting their fingernails. And that's why they were excited about the draw, is because their guy did finally come through and perform at the level they were hoping they were going to receive. And I think us as fight fans, we also received, because to me, that off of that performance alone, like I was saying earlier to Gabriel here on the show, was I think now he's very competitive with the rest of the middleweights out there, that if there was a fight between himself and David Lemieux, I got to tell you, my money would be on Canelo beating David Lemieux right now.
Yeah. You know, now that you bring up Lemieux, do you guys know how his future is going to be, like, for the rest of the 2017? Because they really haven't been talking about him. I know that they want him to wait for Cotto. But he's also another fighter I like to follow. And you know what? Speaking about these fighters on promotions, I like the way Golden Boy is matching up their fighters right now on ESPN. Same thing with Top Rank, and which leads me to the subject I was going to bring up: the fighters on PBC. I'm pretty excited about the Deontay Wilder and the Ortiz fight. You know, I think that's going to be a good matchup. But with the PBC fighters, if it's not a matchup that I'm excited for, you know what? In all honesty, dude, I won't even watch the BBC fights. I really don't. I guess it has to do with, you know, their matchups in the past where they got a superstar against somebody who's ranked number 70 in a lower weight class. But come on, man. and I watch a lot of boxing.
But you know, here's the thing with PBC, and I know a lot of people shit on them, is the only way I can give you analogy about PBC is that it's almost like a baseball little league. Okay, if you have 30 kids, it comes down to you have to let all 30 kids get a shot at the bat, right? You got to give them a shot of playing first. You got to give them a shot of playing left field, right field. Okay, now I'm not a baseball guy, but my kids play t-ball. You got to give even the shittiest players a chance to play, and when you have so many fighters. Right? When you have so many fighters, it's almost in that same scenario. Al Haymon, Uncle Al, is in that same position. He's kind of got to let everybody he signed have a chance to get in the ring and have a chance to have some of that TV spotlight. So it's unfortunate, but I think that me and Gabriel have talked about this, that when the money starts to get low, that's when you start seeing better fights. We've seen in the past, and I can't complain about PBC. I think in the beginning, they have been making good fights this year, and they continue to start putting good cards this year, you know? So they're always going to have a hit and miss because they have so many fighters. Everybody has a hit and miss. Top Rank has a hit and miss. Golden Boy has a hit and miss. But I agree with you. Golden Boy has been doing good with ESPN, but they had their format from a straight up TV. They were doing good matchmaking there as well.
Yeah. Well, like you said, this year, I mean, the PBC, I mean, how long were they doing free boxing? I mean, they've been doing free boxing, what, 3 years now? Three years? I mean, yeah, of course they ran out of money, but I mean, I always expected them to do some type of round robin with their with like Garcia.
It's hard.
Garmin.
It's hard to do, bro. When you have 35, you know what? It's hard to do when you have 30 guys in the same weight division around Robbie. Like I said, they're gonna mix. They're gonna mix and match as much as they can, and you're not gonna get the best out of it because you sometimes got to let the shitty players play the good players, and it's not gonna create combustion that's exciting. You know what I mean? But hey, let me ask you.
Canelo is 22, and that before Golden Boy got him, Canelo was already something of a star in Mexico as a teenage fighter, and they got him at 19. Although I always kind of wonder if he was a little younger than that. But here was a guy that was already winning titles and looking at somebody that was going to be a potential future star, this red-headed Mexican kid. And, I just think that they were in a unique position where they had Oscar still at the top of his clout as a fighter promoter. And then, he starts fighting, he fights Floyd, and they start moving Canelo into that circle because they didn't really have another guy to develop in that as the next pay-per-view guy. So they started Canelo really young. And on top of that, there was still a lot of guys that had fought at a high level at that and the pay-per-view end of things. Shane Mosley was there, ultimately Miguel Cotto. He's got to feast on a lot of those guys. Those guys passed the torch to Canelo the way Floyd didn't to this next generation of welterweights. So I think, Canelo, he got a lot of success and a lot of notoriety real early on that maybe, it is for better or for worse. I think we had expectations of him fighting these kind of fights back then, and really, when you look at the careers, you look at how Oscar was developed, this is when he began his run towards, his contemporaries, 26, 27,
right.
In there. So it's kind of right on time.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Really quick, brother, what's your pick for Jorge Linares and Luke Campbell? Who do you got this Saturday?
Linares.
Linares. Okay, you got him by decision or KO?
In all honesty, I'll be very honest with you, okay? I didn't watch Linares fight on the last time he fought. I got it on my DVR. I mean, I've been meaning to get to it, but I keep hearing his name up, so I'm hoping he'll do good, and I do want to watch that. But to answer your question, I really can't answer it right now because I watch a lot of boxing. I'm just not good at the names. And by the time I'm watching the boxing, I'm having beers. I'm just having a good time, you know?
That's the way to do it.
That's how Adelaide Bird scores fights.
That's exactly what.
Hey, man. Believe it or not, man. I mean, she saved me a lot of money, man. She saved me
a lot of people a lot of money, man.
Yeah. God bless her heart, man. All right, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
All right, brother. You take
All right,
care.
Guys.
Bye, fans. You want to call in 347-275-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get down to it. The big fight that's happening this Saturday at the Forum, September 23rd. You have Luke Campbell with 17 wins, 14 KOs, with one loss against Jorge Linares, 42 wins and 27 KOs, three losses. It's all going down for the WBA, WBC Diamond, and Ring Magazine Light Heavyweight. So yeah, lightweight title. But on the undercard, you got Antonio Resentless Orozco versus Roberto Ortiz. You want to get into a little bit about this fight here? Because this is a pretty interesting fight on the undercard here. They're fighting for the WBC and USNBC super lightweight title here, Gabriel.
We can go into that one. I just think it's funny. If you're getting car insurance, you want to save money, you go to the Gecko. If you're in boxing, you want to save some money, you go to the Bird. this is a tough one. I haven't seen a whole hell of a lot of Roberto Ortiz.
You're not the only one. I think a lot of folks haven't seen him. I mean, look, his most notable fight for Roberto Ortiz, who has got 35 wins, 26 KOs. He only got one loss. And that one loss comes off, and that's the notable fight that he has, which was against Lucas Matisse in 2014,
right.
Okay? And he was dropped by a body shot, but wasn't really hurt. He wasn't really hurt. He stayed down. He did make the ninth, the count to number nine. Then he decided, I mean, he came up at the same time, but the ref said, you know, figured I have had enough. I watched enough and called it off. His last fight was a draw with Diego Cruz, okay? But since that loss with Lucas, okay, since that loss, he's gathered up five wins with one draw. The thing about him is he's 5'9" and a half. He's a tall lightweight, okay? He's really tall, but he's not the fastest dude in the world. But he does have a good uppercut, which he was being pretty successful with Cruz, and he was pretty good with Matisse for as long as it lasted. But the problem with is that he sometimes tends to throw that uppercut from the outside, which is not really good if you're a tall, lanky guy. If you're 5'9 and a half, almost close to 10, you don't want to throw your uppercut from the outside. You'll want to be in the pocket when you throw that uppercut, okay? And a lot of times you don't even want to throw an uppercut to a shorter guy. But the one thing he does bring to the table, he's got a good counter left hook. He landed on Lucas Matisse pretty good with it. He landed on Cruz, Diego Cruz, pretty well with it. He's got good head movement. He's got a good jab, but sometimes it can get really, really lazy. But he does have a good right. But he needs that distance, okay? He needs that distance. And sometimes he doesn't know how to register that distance properly. And that's what kind of left him open with Cruz to have some success over the taller guy. Orozco, he's a guy that can close that distance. He needs to close that distance to go to that body. He kind of has to do what Lucas Matisse did, is go to that body. And he also has to eliminate anything of that left hook that I said that Ortiz likes to throw by being in close. So it is a good fight. You know, it is a really good fight. It's an interesting fight. But as a betting man, I would have to go for the 5'7", Antonio Orozco, who's the undefeated fighter. He only got 26 wins with 17 KOs. He's the undefeated guy. His last win was over against Keandre Gibson. And here's another guy that's been on the scene, and everybody's kind of been waiting for him to explode onto the scene. This is not going to be the fight, I don't think. But I think it's a fight that can keep him busy, and Ortiz can keep him a little – give him the rounds that he's going to need. Because, as I said, he's a tall guy that does know how to use the head, does know how to use the jab, and could throw a good, decent right hand.
Yeah, I think that, it's Orozco's fight. You know, he is a shorter guy. But, you know, when you see that a guy doesn't really fight out of his own country and then he fights Matisse, he gets stopped in two rounds, especially the way he did. I just don't see, you know, all it says to me is there's a reason why he's fighting Antonio Orozco, and it's not because he got that magic draw in his last fight.
No.
You know, so I think
he's a workhorse.
I think Orozco is going to be all over him. He's going to work for it a little bit. But, you know, I also thought that Keandre Gibson was going to give Orozco a little bit of trouble. He got stopped in four rounds. It was Orozco's only fighter this year back in April. He looked real sharp in that fight. So I expect him to stay the same way, nice and sharp, and to get the guy out of there. If he's at that level, then he should be able to get Roberto Ortiz out of there. So I've got him winning by stoppage.
I got him same thing. You know, the thing about Roberto Ortiz is that he's a workhorse, meaning that he's a horse that can take a whipping for a very long time. And we haven't really seen him get hurt, even with Lucas Matisse. Like, he got dropped. He went down. It almost felt like he felt the pain and said, oh, I'm going to go down really quick to save myself from getting hit anymore from there. Okay. But got up right away. Didn't seem hurt. His eyes were cleared. He just took too long to get back up. So again, Orozco should be able to work that body, should be able to whip the horse as long as he can till the horse gives in and obeys and goes back down on the canvas and stays there. You know, so I would have to say, I think I'm safe to say that this is going to be the second KO loss for Roberto Ortiz on this undercard against Antonio Orozco.
Yeah, that's what I think. Jumping to the main, I think Luke Campbell's a fine fighter, you know. He brings a lot to the table. This is a real fight. He can box. He doesn't mind banging a little bit. He's got a good KO percentage, 14 knockouts, only got one loss. It was decision loss against Ivan Mendy. if I'm saying that guy's right, name right. And he'd been dropped, you know, left hook to the head in the fifth. But that was, you know, back in 2015. And since then, he's rattled off, I think, with five wins, including that.
He's got five wins,
know, stoppage,
right?
Yeah, against Darlys Perez and heading into this fight. And so I think it's a real fight. And with a guy like Jorge Linares, it's got that paper-thin skin. He's got a chin that's questionable. He's definitely fighting, you know, he's really hit his stride and come into his own. He's got supreme boxing skills, beautiful wheels, beautiful combinations, excellent balance. It's got everything you want, although the fights generally are going to go a little bit longer. I don't think of him as a guy with a big, you know, finishing shot. He's got 27 KOs in 42 wins, three losses, and all three of those losses are knockout losses. Hasn't happened in many years. Hasn't happened since his back-to-back losses to Antonio DeMarco and Sergio Thompson in 2011, 2012. So, you know, like I said, he's, you know, the guy's got kind of like a Lennox Lewis in that sense of that. I know I'm vulnerable, but, you know, we've got the skills and the ability to keep people at bay. And I expect that to happen here. You know, I think that Linares is going to build up an early lead. I think things will get a little tighter as the fight goes on and he tires and gets a little easier to hit. But I just think he's a cut above Luke Campbell. I think he's going to show that. But I still think the fight goes the distance. I got Linares by decision.
You know, I wouldn't disagree with that, because the fact that Luke Campbell got dropped in the fifth round and lost that split decision against Ivan Mendy in back in 2015 has not shown evidences he can get hurt or get dropped again. You know, like I said, he came back after that after five wins. Jorge Linares has always had that, you know, questionable chin, though that was 6 years ago. You know, actually, no, 5 years ago, because in 2011 he was stopped by Antonio DeMarco on the 11th round, and then he was stopped in the second round by Sergio Thompson. Right. You know, and then since then, he's compiled 11 fights that he's won. You know, he's a beautiful boxer. What stands out with Luke Campbell is beating, getting the ninth TKO over Darlys Perez, because Darlys Perez had a tough fight, and a lot of people felt that he won against Maurice Hooker. Didn't get that win. So he had a tough customer in front of him, you know. The one thing that worries me about Luke Campbell is this. Is, like you said, the movement I think is going to be a problem. Jorge Linares has got beautiful footwork. He knows how to move. Campbell has a wide stand. And when he faced Mendy kept him outside. Mendy was able to kind of control the distance and the ring generalship. And when he did that, Campbell's punches were always at the end of the glove of the guard of Mendy. You know, like, he really didn't know how to close that distance. But after that, it almost seems like he adjusted himself and he kind of understood that he needed to press a little bit more and close the distance, okay? Because he's got a good left hand. There's power in that left hand, okay? He's got a good right. He does know how to go to the body fairly well. But the problem is that he likes to throw his load and he gasses out, which kind of leaves the other guy to play catch-up to win the rest of the round. So he's a little too cautious sometimes after. I mean, he should be a little bit more cautious about how much of a combination he throws. He needs to know how to pace himself, which he really doesn't really do. You know, he does lead with a good right. He is a southpaw. But that already being said, he's in with one of the best lightweights out there right now. One of the better guys that know how to box. One of the guys that, yeah, he's got a questionable chin, but he's been connected. He's got hurt, but he's been able to recoup and adjust to whatever game plan you're coming with. It's up to Luke Campbell to make sure he's got an A, B, and C plan, and it's up to him to try to cut the ring off and be a little bit more aggressive, but at the same time, don't overdo yourself where you're going to gas out in those later rounds. So I'm with you. Jorge Linares by a unanimous decision.
So, to be live, but not too live, crew, to make that reference. But
yeah.
I was a reach. That was a bit of a reach. But you think about their experience level, too. You know, one guy hasn't even had 20 fights. The other guy is, you know, Jorge Linares, you know, has got 45 fights. And he doesn't look like a guy with a ton of miles on him. Looks like a guy that could keep going for a while, Linares. He's also the taller guy, 5'8", 69-inch reach. You know, Campbell isn't exactly short, you know, he's 5'9", 71-inch reach, or rather, I got him switched, mixed up. So he is a little bit taller, a little bit longer reach, but I just – I like Linares' sense of distance, his sense of pacing, and just his ring IQ in there. And I think really the biggest thing for me is the ring experience. He's been through the ringer. He's been stopped before. You know, the DeMarco fight was a fight that he was winning that turned on him all of a sudden with the cuts. They weren't able to stop him in the corner, and he ends up, you know, getting stopped along the ropes, kind of showing a fragility and an inability to,
right.
to really kind of tough it out against DeMarco. You know, I think he's erased some of that for people, but particularly for myself. That's why I just think he's going to get the decision. But I think it's going to be a very exciting fight. I don't expect it to be a boring fight by any means.
I think it will be a clear decision. Right. The way the styles, the, both guys, their style, it's really made to have some action. I don't know. I'm not sure about spurts. I think it, for me, it's up to Luke Campbell to make the fight happen with Jorge Linares. The thing you have to add, of all the stuff that you just said right now, the thing you have to add to the repertoire of Jorge Linares is the confidence. Because when DeMarco stopped him, he got in with Sergio Thompson, got stopped right away. That there's a mentalness there that was gone, that he needed to rebuild. And he was able to do that with 11 fights. And I think right now the confidence level is at an up high. It's Luke Campbell's job to remind him that a nightmare can happen all over again. And I think that Luke Campbell does carry the power and being a southpaw and could, and he leads pretty good with that left. He could upset Jorge Linares, but he's got to really press for it. And I'm not sure because of his footwork, the way I see, like I said, he's got a wide stance, man. I don't know if you looked at his stance. It's super wide that he's not able to really get his,
That's the thing.
It's like when he can't get him.
He shoots and he can't reset.
Yes.
Yeah.
He can't reset. Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's something that they should have worked on. And you can't figure that out against a much superior boxer in Jorge Linares. You just can't do it. You know? So he's really got to go in. I hate to say this, like a Jeff Horn. Be all over him. He's got to be all over him. Try to land a big shot. Make it very uncomfortable for him. Try to create cuts, because Jorge Linares has been cut before. Try to push him back against those ropes. He's got to do all of that. And on top of that, though, that means that you're gonna expel a lot of energy that you're probably not even used to doing. So you're risking it as well, getting knocked out. Mm-hmm.
You know who scored for Darlys Perez in that Maurice Hooker fight? Adelaide Burke.
The one that flew over the cuckoo nest? Is it that one?
Yeah, it was like the one person that actually had it for the guy you thought was a bird.
Yeah.
So, you know. But the other two had a draw and had it going the other way. Adelaide going way the other way. One guy, 93-97, Glenn Feldman, 95-95, Adelaide Bird the other way, 97-93.
You know what?
Fight am I watching, Bird?
That should be her nickname. But you know, let me tell you this. Sunday night, I thought I had 7 beers. And you know who told me I had 7 beers in the fridge? Adeline Bird. She was wrong. I only had 4, bro. I only had 4 beers and stuff. We're cutting close here on Leaving the Ring. Right. We're cutting close here on Leaving the Ring. We're about to cut it. I wanted to talk about Luis Ortiz and Dante Wilder, but I think we're going to be going way over our time here. So we might have to revisit this. Because the best opposition so far that I can think of, you want to cover this really quick, or you want to wait till next week?
Well, we can wait on that one because that fight's in the future. But we also still have Oscar Valdez versus Genesis Cervania, and
by the way, I think we
got Gilberto Ramirez versus Jesse Hart. This is top rank on ESPN. This might be one of the best Friday night fight cards, even though it's not an officially Friday night fight card. But it's on ESPN and it's on Friday. Igas Kovalas. Steve says this so much better than I do. Kavalishkis versus Mahonry Montez and Michael Conlan, Michael Middle Finger Conlan, versus Kenny Guzman. But then on Saturday, you got Joseph Parker versus Huey Fury. You've got Dick Schaefer's dirty little tournament, Junior Dorit Dorikos versus Dmitry Kudryashov.
Dorikos is the guy to keep an eye on. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, but you know, Kudryashov brings it. He brings the house.
Mm-hmm.
He's been, you know, stopped. He came back, stopped that guy in the rematch. He's got a lot of heart. 31-year-old veteran against you know, a Cuban school guy. That's those two fights, Hart Ramirez, and this fight, to me, are the fights I'm looking forward to more than any other this weekend. And it's a great weekend.
Great, great weekend. Yeah, it's going to be jam-packed here. We should have a lot. Oscar Valdez, man, I want to see him. I want to see where he goes from here. You know, he's improving. He keeps improving. See what happens this Saturday. You know, if you're a fight fan, you should be excited. We're having a lot of fights being scheduled and set up. The one most that I'm very excited about is Rigondeaux versus Lomachenko. I'm excited about Ortiz and Wilder. It's a good heavyweight fight. I'm not excited about Hayes' return. You have to tell.
No, Jesus God. But you know, that's boxing. It's like you do a bad job or get knocked out of the ring, and you can just come on back. I think Cervania, you know, against Valdez, Cervania is a nice right hand. Stops fighters with the overhand right and the uppercut, can get you to the body. He's got a nice tight punching frame. He's strong for the weight, good bounce in his step. You know, so I think he's going to bring it. He's there to win, and he's going to push Oscar Valdez, I think, you know, who's he's coming off a tough fight. And really what this is it's his moment. You know, Lomachenko, Terrence Crawford, they've had their moments to step up. Manny Pacquiao on the ESPN platform, the top rank with their new deal. I think Valdez is going to be in for an action fight every time out. This, his style dictates that. But, you know, he's looking to make his statement here. And if he's able to stop Genesis Cervania in an exciting fashion, that's going to be a major feather in his cap. I think the kid's got a lot of star quality. He's speaking out against Trump the last few weeks because his family has been directly affected by this president's racist policies on immigration. I like everything the kid's showing me, from his boxing to his integrity. So this is a big moment for him.
The track road that he's taking is definitely the one that you always say is short-lived, but it's always long to remember. The guys that he's facing are you know, they're tough fights, really tough fights. And it always ends up to be a short career, but those are the careers that we always remember. And that's where I see Oscar Valdez. You know, he's getting himself in some real tough fights, but they're statement fights. And there's no fights that are telling us how good he is and how much he wants to test himself. And those are the guys that are being missed in our sport. I'm happy for Oscar Valdez. I'm excited to see him. Again, folks, if you guys don't forget, every Monday we have the next round at 4 p.m. Pacific time. And every Wednesday, you got Leaving the Ring at 5 p.m. Pacific time. I'm going to be dropping a video of the Boxing Spotlight with Dave Duenas tomorrow. And I touch on some other subjects, especially like BJ Saunders and other fights that happened on the Super 6 tournament that Dick Schaefer's presenting and stuff. But other things as well on the Boxing Spotlight. Again, don't drink and drive. Enjoy your weekend because you will spill your beer, Mr. Montoya. As always, brother, it was fun talking boxing, but I'll talk to you next week.
Peace.